Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 105. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, the Indians extended Carlos Carrasco, and we as a people do not love him nearly enough as much as we should. The Indians are probably going to trade Corey Kluber, Trevor Bauer. It sounds like one of them is probably gone at the winter meetings. And you know, Saras over at the Athletic talked about the next money ball. It's already happening right around us. The Indians are doing it. A lot of smart teams are doing it. We'll talk about that for a little bit. And of course, we'll answer your questions from Twitter and Facebook. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I forgot about the whole trading Corey Kluber thing. I just was reminded of it just
now. Did you forget that was happening there?
And then I got sad. Well, I just saw a tweet about it from the great Paul Hoynes. I was like, oh no. And then you push it out of your brain, because that's how you survive in this world these days, Matt, is by ignoring the things that make you sad. I'm great, though.
I'm almost okay with it happening at this point?
Well, yeah, no, it's called being resigned to the fact of the matter. I mean, it's how we get through things. Like how today I found out that, in fact, we will be open on New Year's Eve instead of being closed as I had expected for a long time. And I'm now resigned to the fact. I can complain, I guess. But to who? They won't care. So there you go.
So we'll start. We'll get to Corey Kluber in a minute. That's fine. We'll start with Carlos Carrasco. The Indians, they got him some money. I guess maybe not as much as he could probably get if he was a free agent, but they extended him through 2021 and 2022 and 2023 with a vesting option. So they're going to have him for quite a bit. That's pretty much all of his mid-30s. By the time he does hit the free agent market, assuming the Indians don't trade him, he's probably not going to make a ton of money, and it might be just the end of his career. He said, actually, that he wants to finish his career in Cleveland, so I think this is pretty neat. There aren't a lot of athletes that I think it's exaggerated how many there aren't, but there isn't a ton that don't want to just say they want to play in Cleveland forever like Carlos has done. Obviously, Trevor Bauer doesn't, but that's just, it's nothing against Cleveland. He just doesn't want to stay anywhere. I don't feel like Francisco Lindor will give any kind of discount. Not that he has to, but it's just kind of unique and special that Carlos Carrasco is such a good player. And he's also always sort of like the other player, the other Cy Young that we have, the other big personality. But maybe it's time we love Carlos Carrasco just a little bit more for how funny he is and how much he loves Cleveland, and that he's sticking around for a while.
And, you know, I mean, you have an excellent point there. He really is the other. I mean, were it not for the fact that he's on the same team as Corey Kluber, he'd be heralded as basically the ace of the team, unlucky as he is. You had a 4.8 win season, 2.5 that was injury shortened, 5.5, then 5.3 this year. He's remarkably consistent when he's actually able to play. And I think that's what's been, again, overshadowed, I suppose, by Kluber, and then now the emergence of Bauer. But also what you said about him being the other, when he signed this contract, I was reminded of course, Jose Ramirez, the other MVP that the Indians have, who actually in many metrics, I guess, is probably can be considered better than Francisco Lindor, but he's a different kind of personality, a similar massive ego in a way, but it doesn't kind of present itself as it does with Francisco Lindor. But I mean, I've long been on the train that Carlos Carrasco has been my favorite pitcher for the Indians for really since they've had this pitching staff together. I've always thought he's had such a fun arsenal, way more variety than say Kluber or even, well, maybe not Bauer anymore. Bauer now has what, 4+ pitches? It's absurd, but I don't know. Carrasco is a wonderful pitcher to watch, a wonderful pitcher to, well, no, I take that back. Sometimes he's terrible to watch. When he really starts slowing it down and it gets really fidgety when he's on the mound there, that is my least favorite part, I think, of watching Carlos Carrasco pitch. He still does get into his head a little bit, but he's been, of all the pitchers they've had come through in the last several years, he's been the most fun one to watch just kind of evolve ever since. I guess it was 2014, right, when he got converted to the bullpen, and after having a terrible April, and then was just amazing, and then was kind of press-ganged back into the rotation, has been excellent ever since. He never quite hit that level that he was out of the bullpen, but I don't think he was ever going to anyway, and even with that, he's still been some kind of excellent. I think he was the 10th best pitcher in a couple of different metrics this year. Last year, similar. I mean, over the last several years, he's been one of the best pitchers of baseball, and you just forget about it because of either the continued excellence of Kluber or the steady emergence of other guys. He's just been so there this entire time. Except in 2016 when he wasn't there so conspicuously.
Only for a little bit. The rest of the season was good. It's like since 2015, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, period. Like, Corey Kluber's been better, but he's also super good. And I think I'm one of those ones that are guilty, and a lot of people probably are if they don't want to admit it, of like fawning over Corey Kluber and how good he has been, and then just sort of like jumping over Carrasco and, oh, look at how good Bauer is, and Clevinger and Bieber, and like, because he's just always sort of the other guy. And but yeah, like you said, he's super fun to watch, except when he slows it down, and it's been fun to watch just how far he's evolved. I don't know, Trevor Bauer's ascension to what he is now wasn't perfect, but I don't think he ever dipped quite as low as Carlos Carrasco did.
Well, Carrasco was,
it was like a head Carrasco, case and all this stuff or whatever.
And Carrasco was the other in the Cliff Lee deal too. That was supposed to be the star, the focus of that trade was I don't remember the guy's name now. He had finger problems, I think. It wasn't Adam Miller, because that was the other guy, but what was his name?
I am not looking it up right now, but I'm just talking.
No, I'm just kind of staring off into space as I think with my broad brain.
Definitely.
I believe the name
Knapp.
Yes. Thank you.
Oh God, Jason Knapp.
Yeah, Jason
That's
Knapp
a name
was the focus.
I never remember again.
I know, right? No, that that was a got a lot of names on that trade, actually. Jason Donald and Lou Marston were also in that trade. There were a lot of
they
articles
both
that I produced
more than Jason Knapp ever did.
No, that without a doubt. I mean, Lou Marston, I saw him hit a home run one time in person. That was pretty cool. No, I mean, I can't tell you how many articles that trade has produced for me, writing whether here or the previous websites I've written for, because, I mean, Lou Marston was great in his own way. Jason Donald always told me he was going to be great, and then never was. And of course, Carlos Carrasco, who, again, he is of all of the four big ones they've had, I think my favorite, the one I've spent the most time on, probably like making a point to watch all their starts, actually would probably be Mike Clevinger, just because last year in 2017, I tried to watch every single one of his starts and kind of pseudo document it and kind of watch his growth. But Carrasco is definitely the one that in my own eyes was always appointment viewing, simply because he was. I just enjoyed the way he mixed pitches and seeing how he went from game to game and featured one pitch over another. It's almost like he was some days experimenting with, like, maybe my changeups will be the pitch today, or I'm going to try and throw more sliders. Doesn't work out. Suddenly I'm terrible. I'm going to throw more curveball, because his curveball has been very, you know, second best curveball on the team. Now probably the third best slider. Second best changeup probably. Again, just a myriad of ability, and when he's healthy, once again, he's a legitimate ace and one of the best pitchers in baseball, and now he's going to be in the Indians for quite a long time. And I just have to reiterate, I think it's very funny that the two guys that they're going to be able to keep around for a long time are the others, you know, and just got the guys from out of nowhere. I mean, not to say that Corey Kluber wasn't out of nowhere, completely out of nowhere as well, but I guess you could lump Bauer more into that. He was a first-round pick. So was Francisco Lindor. Both of them are more than likely to leave as soon as their arbitration years are up, whereas the other guys who are in the rotation or on that side of the infield are going to be sticking around for a long time. And the fact that that's not a problem, I think, is really, really neat. I'm just going to say, I don't know how Carrasco can get any better. We've probably seen his best. I mean, he'll be 32 in 2019. But he also does have that kind of mix of that style of pitching, I suppose, I would hope, at least carry him into a gentle autumn of his career, I suppose.
And I think we also have to be fair to Corey Kluber that he technically did sign a contract to be with the Indians, I think almost as long as Carrasco's is.
Yeah, like, no, he'd be 34, 2021, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, he also wanted to be in Cleveland forever, and he's also super good, and
I don't think that's the problem. Fun.
Yeah.
He was too good. He too many accelerators in his contract. The bastard was too damn good at his job. And now he's forced his way out of Cleveland. The fool.
And then my last thought on Carrasco is just that you can't really ignore just how funny he is, like, even when he's not pitching. It's the grabbing the microphone and just calling games when he strapped a cooler to his head to mock Trevor Bauer. He dressed up as I think it was after he got his. Was it after he became a citizen, he dressed up in All-America stuff one time in the dugout, or in the clubhouse? So, I don't know, the guy's just fun. He's like everything about every player I like, but I've always just sort of almost overlooked him from to this point, which probably shouldn't happen anymore, because he's super good and he's going to be here. I would hate if they traded him towards the end. I would think he's cheap enough now that almost no matter what, they could keep him unless some other team really wants him for how cheap he'll be in the last couple of years. But
he also has terrible facial hair, so you know he's got that going for him.
Oh, how dare you? That is fantastic facial hair. There is no other facial hair I want him to have.
Oh, well, no, it's iconic at this point. It's like Anthony Davis's eyebrow, but I mean, it doesn't make it good. It just makes it what it is, I guess. I'm curious to see where he ranks in complete games in the last several years. Yeah, so since 2015, he has the sixth most complete games in baseball, which is, again, another thing you really think about. That's the thing you think about with Corey Kluber, who has twice that many since 2015. But he has 14 compared to Carrasco's 7. But even with that, I mean, Carrasco he's just demonstrated durability and absent some freak accidents, obviously. Nothing's ever happened to him that would make you like worry about his arm or whatever health, except for the fact that he had Tommy John surgery, which always makes you worry. But hey, he's an Indian for a while now, and when Bieber starts his meteoric rise, and Clevinger becomes full time ace, Carrasco will be the number 3 in the rotation, just like he is now, and they'll win another World Series. That's pretty good.
That poor guy. I do feel bad for him. But on the subject of Kluber and Bauer, now that we're in the winter meetings, the first day was today. Or yesterday, depending on when you're listening. Well, you're not listening to this now, so yesterday was the first day of the winter meetings. In the past, I think there's been a little bit of action on day one, but not a whole lot this time around. The Royals did sign Billy Hamilton, so go them, I guess.
Great signing, I think. I mean, just for that outfield. I got, in all honesty, that's a huge, stupid outfield, and you need people who can really go and get it there. So, I mean, no one's better at going and getting
I mean, did nobody else want Billy Hamilton at all?
No, like, why would you nobody else wanted him? I totally understand why, because no one else wants him. I mean, he's got a declining skill set in a game that has passed him by. It's
well, still, I think he's going to be one where like midway through the season, somebody's going to trade him or trade for him just so they can use him in like pinch running situations in the playoffs.
That's true.
That's like all you need him for. You don't need to pay for him for a whole season. Just send the Royals a couple single A prospects, let them do what they want, and you got your speed guy for the playoffs. So
yeah, exactly.
That's
my
theory, which is smart for the Royals to do. But
and that's how any rebuilding team should do it. I mean, that's why I was always impressed.
They did it with Mikel Moustakas last year too.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why that's one of the ways that the Yankees were able to accelerate their rebuild too. They signed all those relief pitchers and traded them.
Why are you complimenting the Yankees on this podcast?
Look, they're a well-run team. What are you doing? Right? I'm just saying, I always thought that should be a tactic for any team trying to rebuild, is sign a bunch of relief pitchers, see which ones work out, and then grab some contenders, good prospects, because apparently the rule is you can only trade all your good prospects for mediocre relievers having a good year.
Listen, I know you're the big shot at Beyond the Box Score over there, but you don't need to be praising the Yankees just because you're big time now. I mean,
hey, listen here, all right?
Of us only write about one team.
Hey, real recognize real or whatever, all right? Also, I wrote about the Mets last week, so what do you want from me?
So, Corey Kluber, Trevor Bauer, one of them's going to be traded. It sounds like the latest rumors are really heavily leaning towards the Dodgers and their number one overall prospect, whose name I just forgot as I was saying it. But basically, the gist of what the Indians want is a top-flight outfielder, it seems like, because also Corey Ray from the Brewers they seem to be wanting, who isn't quite as good as the Dodgers guy. His name I can't remember. But I'm assuming they'd also want somebody in the majors now, like Yasiel Puig from the Dodgers, Cody Bellinger if they can squeeze him away, or even, I don't know, to be a really good reliever. But it sounds like they're just trying to fix their outfield now and in the future with this one trade, which is, if you're going to trade Corey Kluber, that's like what you have to do. And I don't think this deal... Like, a lot of Indians fans, if they're freaking out about it, it's understandable. They just don't want to lose Corey Kluber because he's Corey Kluber. We talked about it last week. We get it, what's happening. We hate it, but it's happening. But then the opinion from, like, people outside of the Indians is just that the Indians are being cheap just because they're trading away Corey Kluber. But then in the same breath, they also note that the Indians could easily just not take his option in 2020 and 2021. So it's not even, like, that much of a financial... Like, they could just not take his option if they want. They're trading him now because it's smart to, regardless of how much he's being paid. Because this is when you trade him. You don't trade players in the last year of the contract anymore. Nobody does that for half a season of a pitcher. So they're doing it now to get the most they can. If they can repair their entire outfield with one player, listen, as much as I love Corey Kluber, like you were just saying, they have Shane Bieber, Mike Clevinger. They'll still have Trevor Bauer. They'll have Carlos Carrasco. They'll have our big, sweaty son, Cody Anderson, man. Maybe.
Can't wait. Wait, just you wait. His return will be glorious and dominant, or at least fine.
But I mean, they got plenty. They don't. I hate to say they don't need Kluber, but they can win without Kluber, I think, which is kind of sad to say, but it's true. They need an outfielder probably more than they do another ace pitcher.
I mean, yeah, if the deal ended up being like, the name was Alex Verdugo, by the way.
That's the one.
Yeah, if it were him, Puig, and like Jock Peterson, I'd take that deal.
Oh, yeah.
Be sad, probably. But that's it. That's again, that's two major league outfielders. Suddenly the Indians would have two major league outfielders on their roster. Pretty good.
That's two more than they have now.
Two more than they have right now. or like you said, maybe again, Verdugo, Puig, and Bellinger, or something like that. You know, I mean,
I don't think you get Puig and Bellinger. That's a little.
I think you could get both of them. Yeah.
If you get both of them, that's I interrupt them and say I'll take it, and then hang up immediately and sign the paperwork.
That's not how any of that works, Matt. Damn.
No, if the Dodgers are offering that, I take that immediately. Cody Bellinger, Gaskell, Puig, and
that's literally an entire outfield. Right, yeah. That you would have for I forgot how much. So you'd have two more years of Puig. Four more years at least of Bellinger. One, two. Yeah.
Oh my God, please do that, Indians.
and then 6 years at least of Verdugo. You know, barring of course any extensions they may sign, things like that. So you could talk yourself into another 6 years of Bellinger and then eight or 9 years of Verdugo. Maybe not. He's 22 already. I'd do that. That's a whole lot of outfield for a long time. So I'd still be sad. I mean, I was just saying about it with Carrasco, of course. We've seen the best of Corey Kluber. So it's better to trade too early than too late. Not to go back to a previous subject, but the reason the Yankees are who they are and the Red Sox always were who they were was because the Yankees ran out like a business and the Red Sox ran out like a country club. So one of them won 27 championships and then one of them has won, well, three in the last, what, decade and a half, but prior to that, you know, none. So that's a cold, hard reality of the game. And again, the Indians have the pitching. I think I wrote about it. Maybe that was the article I had spiked because of the damn extension. But the Indians' sole position of strength is the rotation. Like, outside of the rotation and then the two MVP candidates, they can't move because they're not morons. There's nowhere else they can deal. I mean, aside, again, from the catching position, which wasn't a position of super strength. But, I mean, if they have some respect for Eric Haas and, you know, complain as we might about Roberto Perez, he's a good catcher in the sense that he's a good defensive catcher. He can't hit worth a damn, but whatever. I maintain that we don't have a good ability to value catching still in 2018 going into 2019. So the Indians, I think, know they see something somewhere that we don't. So the Indians need to trade a pitcher because if they want to get better. And they need to get better because they won 91 games this past year. They were probably a little bit better than that, but they weren't 107 games or 102 or whatever it was the Astros won. And the Astros just yanked their pants down. I mean, every now and then I idly reflect back to that. I mean, other things in the World Series from 2016 to also pop in my head occasionally, but the entire series was awful. From beginning to end, it was just an utter brutalization. And that's where we'll talk about this in a few minutes. And that's where the Astros are compared to the Indians are in so many different ways. And to get to that level, you do need to, you know, swallow some pride and some sentimentality a little bit, I guess, and trade away Kluber or Bauer. I mean, we keep on saying Kluber, but Bauer is out there. Bauer's out there. He's younger.
Another potential trade partner here. I mean, Paul Hoynes. I don't want to dunk on him too hard because.
Oh, I do.
And it's a relatively easy target for an article like this. And if I stuck my neck out there to do predictions, I guess I deserve to get dunked on too. But he said, so his idea for his ideal 25 man roster, he would trade Trevor Bauer to the Phillies for right-hander Zach Eflin, Adonis Medina, and left-handed JoJo Romero. So no outfielders. The Indians don't need outfielders, so whatever.
Wait, so what would they get? Wait, who would they get back? I'm sorry, what?
Zach Eflin? the Zach Eflin, Adonis Medina, and JoJo Romero. Medina and Romero are minors, and you're two away from the big league.
Top prospects.
So we've just gone, we've taken a current ace pitcher and then just got two maybe good pitchers for a couple years, and that's it.
That's the classic Peter Griffin line of, well, sure, we can take the boat, but the mystery box could be anything. It could be a boat.
There you go. That's exactly what that is.
Or literally the Oakland Raiders trade away Khalil Mack for a first-round pick that could turn into anything. Even Joey, you know, Nick Bosa. I mean, it could be anything. Like,
it could even Fred be the
Khalil Mack. That. But yeah,
and then he also, another good reason is because he gives Plutko a chance, because obviously Adam Plutko is...
You gotta be
for the loss of Trevor Bauer. That's
you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Have you read the? It's really good. I mean,
no, I don't read the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I barely read any baseball writing. All right, everything I do is off the top of my head.
But yeah, that's some good and bad. Oh god, it's so bad trade scenarios. Either way, Ken Rosenthal said he's pretty almost positive that Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer is going to be traded. I mean, it's also the fact that saying that is good for Ken Rosenthal. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know how much weight you put in that, but it does seem like there's a lot of smoke around it now. So, and I mean, if it's Verdugo, Bellinger, and Puig, just slam that button. But I don't think it's going to be quite that much.
All right, but Verdugo, Puig, and Peterson, though, that's pretty good, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, Peterson's got some platoon issues, but...
I mean, the main part is just that. Puig and... Verdugo, and then you just add whatever you can, I think, because that's your current future outfield you got, and then anything else you can squeeze out of the Dodgers while also knowing you're going to take it is fine with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So our next thing here, you brought up this one, which I think we were going to talk about last week, but we didn't. I don't know. I remember reading this last week, but it's at the it was from Eno Saris at the Athletic. It's about the next Moneyball, as he calls it. It's not really anymore in just pure scouting. It's like the next level of that, the evolution. Kyle Boddy talks about it all the time on Twitter from Driveline Baseball. It's about giving players all this information now instead of just choosing players based off of it. Boddy's exact way of saying it was basically that every player, every step of the way to the majors has a step plan of how to improve, what to do, and just basically getting all these numbers that front office types have now into the hands of players, which I think is kind of neat.
Yeah, it's very good. I mean, again, like you said, the one of the worst problems I have with baseball as a whole is the it's a combination, I guess, of this thing that happened in the last decade or so. This commodification of this over commodification of the player. The player's always been a commodity to the owners and the front offices, but to the at this it broke down to a point of these are a series of numbers on a spreadsheet. We need to figure out which ones add up to most wins, and it doesn't matter who they are and things like that, which is a terrible way to run any organization with any semblance of a human resource department, which I assume baseball teams have. I don't actually know that, but
yeah, I never thought of it that way. Like they are just, their employees are just numbers. Can you imagine your employer doing that to you? I mean, I guess if they're paying $30 million, whatever.
Admittedly, my employer does do that because I work in sales, so I don't know. But I think it's a neat change because these players obviously want A, get the most out of their career, B, play longer, and which I guess is part of A, but also they want to know how to get better. And if you're just – and by going that extra step, by showing the players you already have – these are the things you can improve upon, and these are ways we've found you can do it, or these are weaknesses you have, and these are why these weaknesses are occurring, or these are your weaknesses, there's nothing you can do about this, but here's how we can maximize, you know, both you and, you know, both your value, and obviously what we get out of you. Like, one of those things I've read about, like, the fact that the Astros, for instance, have all those camera, those insanely slow-mo cameras all around their park, right? They can see literally everything down to the most minute detail, like, of every single player. So they can see when, down to, you know, a second, basically, or a third of an inning or what have you, when their pitcher really starts to truly lose effectiveness. And that... Well, yeah, that better informs them because whether their arm slot starts slipping or their, you know, one of their fingers is doing something that it not supposed to if they were at full strength, or their stride is off, or what have you. So you can see injury before it happens. You can see, you know, breakdown before it happens. And that helps, obviously, the team. But I think it also helps the player, because they can finding a role, I think, in baseball is vital for 90% of the players. Like, not everyone's Mike Trout or Mookie Betts or whoever. You know, I got someone like Jock Peterson, who we were just talking about. He has platoon problems, but he also has a skill set that can carry him to great heights. Mike Knapley, who just retired, had a certain skill set. He was never going to be a star. He had a star, you know, personality, but he was never going to be a true superstar, and that's fine. So being able to know, I guess, what you are, it's something we all seek out in our everyday life anyway. You know, man's search for meaning and all that. And this isn't giving baseball players true direction in their spiritual life, but at least in their physical life, they can know who and what they are, at least in the eyes of a team. It is nice, I suppose.
Yeah, it is nice. And it all comes back to help the players, I think, in one way or another.
Well, I mean, it all comes back to helping the team, obviously. Well, yeah. But at least in putting the power in the hands of the player,
right,
so to speak, you're helping them get the most out of themselves, which, again, helps the team. But it at least makes it so the player maybe doesn't feel so used, which they're all being used. We're all being used by some employer or other. But it's as long as you're... And this is as in any job, as long as your employer gives you the tools to make yourself better or to succeed as much as you can, it's up to you to take advantage of that, obviously. Right. I mean, you know, these guys can just not do it, obviously, and then they'll be whoever, or they can, and they can become, I don't know, who's a good example? No, just some platoon guy or a short to mid relief guy. Chris Devensky, I think, is a good example of this. Not a good starter. And the Astros knew that, and they never treated him like them. They treated him like what he's been his entire career. And that's going to earn him a lot of money eventually. And it's brought the Astros a lot of success in a World Series championship. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I have a couple things that are half, maybe like a little under half devil's advocate, a little over half real thoughts. So I guess the one is a real concern is about, like, I've heard people talking about this and saying one reason that players are getting paid less is because teams found a better way to invest their money, which is in all these analytics and everything, which is great, but I don't think that should be coming out of what players are making, because the analytics aren't replacing what the players do. They're replacing how the GMs operate and find things. So I would hope that's coming out of, like, GMs are getting paid a little less and analytic departments are growing, but I don't think that's how it's working. But if that's anybody's justification, that doesn't quite work. I mean, the players should still be getting the bulk of the money. I think it's important to, and as we start getting into more analytics and everything, I think it's also important for MLB to show, like, the players don't just look at these numbers and then they level up and they know all this stuff. They still have to work extremely hard,
right?
Put all this stuff into practice, and it's still not just spreadsheets and computer nerd things, no matter how much it is. There's still a lot of work they have to do that they're earning their money for, which I think is important.
Well, I think part of it too is the places where money is being lost by players is, again, not so much in the top end. It is those bottom end kind of marginal guys. Someone like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good player. Teams are more and more finding that there's no real value in carrying I don't want to bring him up, but Michael Martinez. There's no value in having a player like that around, right?
Right.
Like, he can do a lot of things poorly, and yet he had a 12-year career or something like that. Because, whatever, he fit into a bunch of niches and kind of stereotypes of what that type of player is. Those players are, you know, I mean, there's no point in paying someone like that to $5 million when it said you can just bring up, again, Eric Gonzalez, you know, exactly, in the Indians case, Eric Gonzalez, to do it for one-tenth that amount. So I think that's where the real salaries are being lost, is there, and also the fact that, I mean, there's also no point in keeping around a supremely flawed player who can do one thing very well, as we saw with someone like Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton's skill set as a whole isn't, I don't think, conducive to modern baseball, but just as an example, someone who was good for the team, was you know, skilled but flawed, and the team got the most out of him. And after that, what's the point keeping him around when the net that he can bring to the team, in terms of whatever number you want to throw out there, but at the end of the day, just wins on the board, can be eaten up in other ways by other players who can do something that's more sustainable that isn't fully leg based. I guess, does that make sense? At least that's how I see it. The money going to players isn't coming from the top end or even the middle of the road guys. It's those marginal guys, the guys who eke out 8 or 10 year careers, by just being bench guys and, you know, getting a $4 million here, $4 million here deal here, you know, people like that who just, I don't know. I think in time there is going to be a sudden, it's not something that we're going to see, but in 10 years, we're just not going to see players like, I don't know, the do everything kind of players like that. I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong. Like the Brock Holtz of the world, maybe they do bring something to the table that a very analytically focused team sees that is more than just being all right for a platoon or a fill in sort of a position.
Well, I think they'll exist, but they'll be like younger players. Like these aren't going to be older, yeah, veteran guys anymore.
It's right. Just rookies that, yes, come up. I guess that's what. Yeah, I mean, you just won't. Yeah, they won't get out of arbitration, basically, you know, right, or they'll have to do something, you know, majorly different to kind of change themselves to get there. And I'm just looking at the just as an example, the Astros 25 man, and trying to see if I see any names in here. I'm just like, this is, just, I mean, like a player on their team who just doesn't seem to fit really, who isn't just like a real young guy.
Because like, who's the oldest? I'd be surprised if there was. There's like no wasted space on the roster or the Astros whatsoever.
No, really, I that's the thing. Like, Josh Reddick, Brian McCann, Yuli Gurriel are the three oldest position players, along with Evan Gattis, and then Martin Maldonado. But again, the Maldonado thing is interesting because he's a terrible hitter. But this is why I go back to, I think there's something we don't know just as fans, even with all the catching statistics we have, that value comes from, you know, catchers in ways that we can't really read. You know, Marwin Gonzalez is going to be a free agent, and he's good for the team. They're not going to re-sign him, and I don't blame them at all. He's 29 years old. He's the best he's going to be, and that's all there is to it. You know, he's a 103 OPS plus this year as a left fielder.
Yeah.
You can do better than that for less. You know, I'm sure they have someone there. Yeah, they probably have someone in their farm system that can do exactly that for way less.
Yeah, and then not to reiterate the same thing we always bring up with this, but I mean, you got to pay those players eventually when they're younger. You can't keep looking forward to free agency. Like, pay them when they are good. Like, find a way, like, up the price of arbitration, have the audacity to treat minor league players as people, something like that. Somewhere between, you got to pay the younger players a little bit.
Right, no, exactly. I mean, hell, I mean, you know, it's a little disgusting at times to talk about this, that when you know, the average American does not make, you know, and it will never make $1 million in their lifetime sometimes. But like, if the minimum for these guys deserve fair play for fair pay, you know?
Yeah, well, fair, when everybody brings that up, like, these players make so much more than me, how am I supposed to feel bad for them? It's because, like, whatever they're not making is just going into the pockets of somebody who makes even more money than them. That's...
Yeah, and also they're way better at what they do than I'll ever be at anything. So I mean, or at least it's in the market. But like you said, yeah, I'd rather they make the money than,
right,
I don't know, whoever the hell owns the Astros at this point, random rich guy, you know. I don't even know. Yeah,
yeah. So my other minor thing, which, not to get too old man yelled at clouds here, because I love analytics, I love using them, I love the way baseball is going, but part of me misses the fact that we'll never have like another, I don't know how to describe what I'm thinking of. Just like old school guy just comes up and just knows things. And like, I just want to see two players who just like playing off experience, and they're just old and know what's going on and playing, and not based on just all the analytics they have. Like, I think it takes away a tiny bit of personality, maybe, that everybody has the same numbers. And I don't know. This doesn't make sense. It did in my head.
I kind of see what, like, it's just, there's, The one positive to it all that we can always remember is, well, there's one goal at the end of every baseball game, is to score more runs. There's more than one way to do it, even down to swings. Like one thing, you know, you always notice if you watch like Japanese baseball, is they all have almost the same exact swing because they all learn in the same exact way, which is very interesting. Like, it's very differently taught there, I guess, just the way the way they learn the game. Whereas it's, I don't know, it's.
Don't you feel like we're narrowing that down here now, though? Like we're slowly getting down to like the one correct way to play baseball. That's my biggest fear is that we get to the one right way to do everything.
I think we were going there, but there turns a point where there isn't any one way of doing things. Like just because you see how so many different guys succeed in different ways, just across the board, it's hard to, like, yes, they all at the end of the day want to have a slight uppercut to their swing to put more loft in the ball to get it over the fence. But whether it's how they stand in the box or how they, you know, how they get the bat to the ball, you know what I mean? Like all these guys have different physiologies. They aren't all carbon printed. So their bodies have to do different things to get to these different places. You know, like obviously, you know, like somebody like Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa, polar opposites in terms of person. But I mean, at their best, they're basically equal offensive powers, you know? So
are we going to get to the point where everybody looks the same, though? Like, they're all doing these minute things to be different, but they're all trying to hit with the same launch angle and exit velocity and have the same kind of swing.
That might be my worry, too. I mean, kind of like what you were saying about the analytics and wanting a guy to get by on guile and whatnot. I mean,
that's a good word for
it. You'll always have someone who comes up that's like, I don't know, like someone who's just so preternaturally gifted at just hitting the ball that like they don't need to study these things, and they're just like, I don't know. I don't think someone like Mike Trout really is that focused on analytics because he's just the most gifted player we may have ever seen ever. Or someone like Barry Bonds, I don't think he was actually putting work into making sure there's a lot. I mean, and maybe he was too. I mean, you go all the way back to Reed, you know, the science of hitting, and Ted Williams was doing that, you know, 70 years ago or whatever. He was talking about putting a slight launch angle into the ball back then. But that's just smart baseball, basically. So I don't think things like that aren't really new. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe we're going too far, and we're.
Well, I don't think we're going too far. Not quite, but I think. But
you can start extrapolating, and I don't know. I was having this conversation with a friend this weekend. We were watching. Basketball, maybe.
Do you forget you were watching?
I don't know. I was at a bar. Right. Shut up. There was like three TVs on, and I was talking
what
about
were they
one
doing
of
with
them.
The ball, Merritt? Was it a kick?
No. Like you know what? No, I was watching UFC. That's what it was.
That's basically basketball. I mean,
shut up. There was a basketball game on the other screen. But like, it's just we're reaching a point where just in general, and this is not good or bad. It just is a fact that where everything is we're in our chase towards efficiency, because we want to score the most points with as little effort as possible, runs, what have you. We are going to get the issue with efficiency is half the time it's the most boring way to play the game. I wonder at one point if ever there will be a backlash to that, not even from fans or anything like that, but like, and hitting a home run rules, obviously, but I wonder if there'd ever be a backlash from players even from that, you know what I mean? Like maybe they don't want to shoot three pointers or do only layups because mid-range jumpers are cool.
That way I'm already at the point where home runs are kind of, I mean, it's more fun to see a ball like barely get over a second baseman's head and players spinning around the bases. Baseball comes into play than with a home run. Transcending Mike Trout's and Barry Bonds, I just want a big goofy Hunter Pence in there once in a while. Still works.
Evan Gaddis is a total delight. These are the players I think who will never go away because they're like I said, no two people are the same. So no two people are going to take the same pathway to get to a place. You can obviously, like I said, just with the level of academies and things that they have down in places outside of America where lots of people come and learn the same way of doing things from one instructor, which is like what I was talking about with Japan or I don't know. I guess maybe down in like the Dominican or something like that, where guys come out and they seem like many of them stand the plate very similarly. I always thought that was kind of cool. How what's his name on the White Sox now? Mini Miggy. What's his name?
Jose Abreu.
Avisail Garcia.
Oh yeah,
He had the same stance and everything in the box as Miguel Cabrera. And I just thought that was all very neat. Like they just kind of, I don't know whether that's copying or learning from an academy or what have you, but I don't know. I guess my whole point is that the fact the game is still played by humans, and humans are all incredibly different, I think will at least lend for some variety in the game.
Yeah.
There will come a point, of course, where we just start cloning people, and then we got robots versus clones, and then it's begun the Clone Wars have, and
everybody with baseball bats have it. Fighting each other.
And I guess having said all that, I mean, I have noticed that a lot in like younger guys who came through America's systems too. Cody Bellinger's style seems very similar to other players I've seen.
Yeah, maybe that's not terrible. Maybe it's just better to watch better baseball players. That's why I don't think it's ruining the game or anything like that. But
I think it's ruining the game.
Baseball is what I'm saying.
That's it. Baseball is canceled for the winter. Winter season over.
Oh no! What do we do? So every Monday, we ask everybody on Facebook and Twitter for your questions, things we can answer. In the off season, ask us anything. Good little lines or anything.
Butt is sore.
Help us fill some time. Ask us how sore your butt is. We'll tell you. So at Slang EUG, it's the best way I can think to pronounce it. Thanks for the question. He asked, could the loss of Corey Kluber to stabilize the rotation in the way the loss of Brian Shaw through the bullpen and the disarray? Did we answer this one last week? It seems familiar, but no. I don't think so. I think it's something similar last week, but
yeah.
But no, I don't think that's how it works. I don't think Brian Shaw leaving through everything in disarray. Even if it did, I think bullpens are more, I don't think either of them are really that dependent on one person setting things up, but maybe bullpens are a little closer just because the multiple ones come in for a game. But I don't think Corey Kluber, just the mere act of him leaving, will throw the rest of the staff in the disarray, unless he really is like a really, really good leader that everybody follows. But I think most of these pitches are good independently. I'm sure Corey Kluber helps, but I don't think he's keeping everything together quite like that.
In 2018, Brian Shaw had a 5.93 ERA. he allowed 11.5 hits per nine, which will happen. His home run rate leapt massively, walked a ton of people, and he was generally terrible. He actually was worth negative 1.1 wins above replacement.
So he was great.
He was worth 1.1 wins below replacement. WBR, my favorite statistic, which is a long way of saying bullpens are stupid and don't ever trust them. The fact that the Indians had someone like Andrew Miller and Cody Allen and Brian Shaw, for that matter, be so consistently great for so long was a fluke and something they can never be counted on ever. I mean, even look at the bullpen of the Astros. It was pretty good, but wasn't as good as it was the year before. So, no, and plus, I don't know. It's hard to think that losing, because one starter has no impact on the other starters, right?
Well, I mean, not like in a game-by-game basis, but just thinking of an everyday workplace kind of thing. Like, if you have one guy who's really good at everything, and maybe he's helping other pitchers out, they're following his example, that kind of thing. But not that huge of an example. True. Not enough to throw everything out of destabilize it, as he said.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll, I don't know. I mean, who knows? Something, locker room, something.
I mean, if anything on the field, it'd be Yan Gomes. Trading him would have a bigger impact, right? Because you're losing.
Yeah, right. You're losing a catcher. You're losing a guy who several of these pitchers kind of have grown up, you know, throwing to. They all, but even with that, it's not like even like it's going to be a big breaking in period because they, with what's his name, Perez, because they all threw to him for all of 2016 as well, and you know, Bauer for one throws to him every game anyway, so. I don't know. It won't be cool. I think that's the fact of the matter. Well, the Indians will be in some ways worse off because they won't have a 2-time Cy Young winner, but at the same time, he's going to be 33. So, I mean,
yeah,
again, well, what was the title of last week's episode? Yeah, that, you know, I get it. I just hate it. You know, it's stupid.
Yeah. So our next one at Foodatorius. He wants to know, do the national broadcasters realize they're damaging the long-term health of the game by fixating on 4-6 teams? Should MLB interpose some coverage diversity teams terms when the networks re-up? I think it's a hard-to-swallow pill that focusing on the most popular 4-6 teams is probably a better idea than showing the Marlins more often. I mean, I get it, being an Indians fan, you want them to show them more, but I mean, I don't think you can argue with MLB wanting to show the Yankees and Red Sox. Wasn't like the biggest playoff series in a long time for them just because it was those two teams and over the Yankees and Indians and Astros. So, I mean, it's really annoying as a fan of one of the smaller teams and maybe as a team in one of the, or fan in any of the city that isn't like the big six or whatever it is. I don't think it's too terrible, especially with how much teams are like forming into just a handful of super teams every season now. They're just going to focus on those teams now. Like, they're not going to show the White Sox or Royals or Tigers every week. There's no reason to. They're going to focus on the teams who are really good and who are really popular to keep driving popularity to them, to get more ads, and it's what they do.
I mean, you know, there's the point that you want to say, like, these there's this massive diversity of talent just across the baseball right now, but the fact of the matter is a lot of this young talent is kind of on shitty teams.
Yeah.
Like
Angels.
All right, so yeah, you know, like, the Angels have the best player in baseball, and I don't want to watch the Angels that much. I'll tune in once every 2 to 3 innings.
I really try to watch Mike Trout. I really try it. It's so bad. It's painful.
I mean, outside of him and Anderson Simmons, they're just trash, man. I don't enjoy watching. I don't know. I saw enough of Justin Upton when he was in the Tigers. I don't find him aesthetically pleasing. Actually, never mind. I take that back. I think he's a neat home run swing. But like, it's like you said too. Like, people talk about how, like, the NBA does a great job of showcasing, like, a lot of non-large market teams. But I mean, the Lakers are going to be on TV more than ever this year. LeBron James is there, obviously. Then they're going to show the Warriors a ton. I think that the Kings are on TV like twice. I think that, you know, you never see the Pelicans very much, and they're going to show, like, the Raptors a lot. They're never going to show the Knicks get some weird play, but they get some almost a half-hearted, like, salute, basically. So I think that cameras are always going to follow the talent to a degree. I kind of agree with the question asker focusing on teams like the Red Sox and Yankees too much. I think it is. Honestly, I think it is a little bit not good for the game because, again, there is talent elsewhere. I do think the Athletics deserve more attention for so many different reasons. There's three eminently watchable teams in the NL East. Probably three good ones in the Central, in the NL. Once the Cardinals sign Bryce Harper, that'll be very neat.
Cardinals are going to sign Bryce Harper? Is that an official declaration from Barrett Rolfing?
Yeah, it keeps on happening. That will be the show to me, so I just assume it's going to happen. I don't know. There's some teams that I do agree. I think they deserve more attention. Rockies deserve more attention because that's a fun team to watch. They're good. They have cool uniforms, and everything's weird there. And then outside of that,
cool uniforms and everything's weird.
Yeah, damn, dog. Come on. No one wants to watch the Padres or the Giants or the Diamondbacks or the Rangers. God, the Rangers are bad. Or the Angels or the Mariners. Half the team.
That is a lot of teams you just named that nobody wants to watch. And you're completely right, is the problem.
And they're looking like there's most of a division with this AL Central. No one wants to watch those teams. Four of them are rebuilding. Right. If it weren't for the fact that two of them were super bad, we would have had 300 lost teams in one division, which nothing's ever been done. I think it's damaging in small ways over time, and I think the powers that be could do well to focus on teams like the Rays or even the Indians more. The question is, how do you do that? No one really cares about what's going on outside.
The Rays are such a weird in between because they're new and unique, but they're bullpenning, which is so unaesthetically pleasing. Is that a word? Unaesthetically?
Aesthetically not pleasing. I don't know.
Unappealing. Yeah. Aesthetically unappealing.
Unappealing. There you go.
There you go.
But and then the other question is too, like, how do you highlight them? By playing them on Saturday afternoon? I don't know.
Where nobody will watch, and then they'll be like, nope, not doing that again.
Like, I guess Sunday night baseball, yeah, that's fine. Saturday afternoon baseball, but like during the week, they don't.
There's not much.
It's hard to do. Baseball is just such a regional game. It's a game. It's, I don't know. It's such a weird thing to say, but it's just a hard game to kind of.
That's kind of a cool thing, I think, too. Like with baseball, you're in your own little silo more than any other sport. Like football, everybody's all up in your stuff because they have a week to look at everything. But like nobody can keep up with every team all year long. So you pretty much always know more about your team and feel closer to your team, that's one of the things I've always liked about baseball since I was little. Like you had the minor leagues, you had the major league teams, all these things like you knew about and you could master more than people who didn't follow your team.
Right. I mean, and that's what I mean. And you know, for baseball, you know, wieners like us, where we get excited when something weird and new happens out with the Mariners or something, and we actually get to see it because we're up at fucking 1 a.m. for some dumbass reason. Damn, I loved living in the Central Time Zone. I watched so much weird late baseball. Oh man, I remember when I was unemployed, I watched so many Angels games. That yeah, was great. But never Padres games. No, I don't think I'm going to watch a Padres game, home Padres game on purpose. I don't think those are games that people don't. I don't think they actually happen.
I might know they have Francisco Mejia a little bit, but that's about it.
Yeah, I'll probably still forget. So, but yeah, so, you know, I mean, again, I think over time it might be damaging, but it's hard to figure out how you do it otherwise.
Right.
Talk about them on not, you know, while the game isn't happening. I don't know. If you want to get talked about, win a bunch of games, make the playoffs, win a World Series, like the Astros are a national brand right now for one reason. They're cool uniforms.
Clearly, obviously. Yeah. So our last question this week is going to be from @ZacharyZabot. He wants to know, what's the best return hopes for Kluber or Bauer? Can Kipnis be coupled with one of them to dump a salary? If the Indians dump all the salaries, they're free agent they should target. I know.
Nine questions.
I mainly asked this for one main thing about coupling Jason Kipnis, because I don't know a return for Kluber about it. I think we talked about it. Get that return from the Dodgers. There you go. That's my answer to that. But as far as like coupling Kipnis with one of them, I don't want to do that at all. All you're doing is that point is just dumping salary and reducing what you get back for a 2-time Cy Young winner. Forget that. Just get whatever you can for Kluber. If you're stuck with Kipnis's contract, deal with it. I mean, I don't know. I'm not too terribly set on getting rid of Kipnis anyway. Just keep him and use him. If they get rid of Kipnis one way or another, don't tie it to Kluber and reduce what you get back for him. That's just a miserable thing to do.
No, that's exactly. You want to maximize the return for that one thing. I mean, if you just want to get rid of Jason Kipnis, you could probably just cut his ass. I mean, I don't want them to do that. But
I mean, then you still have to pay him. Because like, the point is not to pay him. Yeah.
Right. And I don't know. I mean, I don't. The crux of this argument is obviously getting Yandy Diaz on the field.
That's all that matters, really. That's what we're doing here, is just getting Yandy Diaz on the field. I don't care what
else. What are we doing here? Come on. Like, so, obviously, I mean, if they get that big return for Brantley, that or not Brantley, Jesus, for Kluber, then there's no real space for Kipnis to continue his adventures in the outfield. And then, of course, I want Jose Ramirez at second. Although, if he continues to hit like he did at second, I don't want that anymore. But no, I don't know. I mean, the dumping of salary is stupid because I was saying this before about how players who are very bad are going to lose their place in baseball over time. And I'm not saying that Jason Kipnis is bad. I mean, it's the last year of his career. What are you going to do? Dump him for how much in salary relief? What is it, like $12 million or something?
Yeah, he's got a couple of years on the contract, doesn't he?
No, he's got one. He's signed.
I think Indians are forward thinking enough where if he doesn't have a spot, they wouldn't waste a roster spot on him just because they have to pay him. We've already seen that with like Nick Swisher and Michael Bourne. If there's no spot, they'll just get rid of him. They can't get rid of his contract.
Well, it's it's $14.6 million in 2019, and then there's $16.5 in 2020. Oh, so you lied or to me. $2.5 million.
I said it was just this year.
Well, it's $2.5 million or it's a $2.5 million buyout. Okay. But you listen with your ears, not your butt.
So if you cut a player, how does that work? Do you just pay the buyout in the last one if there's an option?
Or you just give him $2.5 million. Please leave. Here's $2.5 million.
If they cut him like this year, if they cut him this year, what are they on the hook for?
Probably a $2.5 million buyout. You think? Yeah, I think so. That'd be a ridiculous thing for the other way around. That'd be a very ignominious end to his Indians career. It would, too. Jeez.
Yeah.
And how much money he would have made back in 1900? Wow, man, he'd be making $498,000 this year.
What are you? What?
Pretty good.
Are you telling a random conversion change website right now?
Yeah, with the Baseball Reference, you can convert it to your $2,000 and stuff. It's fun. It's fun with numbers. Idea.
Why have you not made like several posts out of that by now? We got space to fill.
Shit,
here,
you're
man.
Right. Thanks, dude.
Space to fill on Let's Go Tribe on no other websites. No, it's a copyrighted idea. Let's Go Tribe.
My garbage on Let's Go Tribe, my great analysis on other websites. I have a system, all right? I hope that answered the writer's question. I mean, I don't think they'll trade Bauer. He's just too good right now. And Maybe trade him next year. I don't know. See where Clevenger goes. See what happens with Bieber. See if he really does meet or exceed those Zips projections.
Yeah, I mean, if Bieber and Clevenger are both outstanding, then you've got another chance to fix another position next year with still a deep round of pitchers. And Tristan McKenzie, if he shows that, like, the year after next year he can be a big pitcher, then holy cow.
There's nothing I love more than putting all my eggs in a prospect pitcher's basket. It's right? Fantastic, and it's never gone wrong for the Indians. Jason Knapp.
And all that matters is you got Cody Anderson coming up. That's the important. And
you know what? Let's all not forget about one little thing here. It's Cody Anderson's great return.
I think this is going to be the third year, week in a row we're going to end on talking about Cody Anderson, and I'm okay with that.
You know what? It's good to have traditions. It is. Third time around is a tradition, so perfect.
There we go. Merritt, I'll talk to you next week. And Cody Anderson and whoever.